I'm going to talk to you about, this is going to be a theoretical talk, because for the last 10 years I've been interested in the question of whether and when social diversity breeds creativity. And while I was doing that research, I've kind of been moving gradually towards this idea that actually open-mindedness underlies a lot of the things that I do, or at least something that I thought that was open-mindedness. And I'll explain that to you in a second, because I think social psychology doesn't really know just yet what open-mindedness is. There's a lot of conflicting perspectives on that topic, and that is fascinating because it's messy, so you can figure out what it is. Maybe I'll figure it out one day, maybe not. So you're going to see me say different things and put the name open-mindedness on kind of many different phenomena, and you may disagree on whether this is open-mindedness or not. This talk is open to discussion on that issue. So traditionally, in psychology, or stereotypically in psychology, we think of open-mindedness as two different traits. One is the need for cognitive closure, or the need for structure, and that is personality trait that has sort of gained popularity in the 90s. And people have discussed about need for closure in trying to explain phenomena to do with racism, prejudice, very negative phenomena. And Eric Liganski has been the great person behind all this. And he has a book which is called The Psychology of Open-Mindedness. Of Closed-Mindedness. And so his Psychology of Closed-Mindedness is the idea that under time pressure, under situation of threat, but also in the case of people with a certain type of personality, which is those who are hiding in foreclosure, this represents closed-mindedness, this represents a dislike of uncertainty, a dislike of situations that violate our expectations. And when I was a grad student, even when I was an undergraduate student, I thought this is what closed-mindedness is. On the other side of the spectrum, there's another personality trait, which is called openness to experience. And so people who like openness to experience, they have a preference for novelty and unexpectedness. So you're going to have papers in social psychology that say, you know, open-minded people are more openness to diversity, and then the way open-mindedness is measured in that paper is going to be with the use of the openness to experience scale. Now, those two measures, or those two constructs, however you think of them, they're not entirely separate, but they're not the same. So they're kind of in this uncomfortable overlap that when you sometimes do statistical analyses, sometimes one predicts things, sometimes the other, and sometimes the results are very inconsistent. But I would say the main difference between them is that openness to experience is more on the side of positive emotions and positive affects and positive reactions, whereas need for structure is more associated with negative affects. And so when I was doing the research for my PhD and some of my postdoctoral work, I worked on this idea that exposure to counter-stereotypes makes people more creative. And we started with a very broad idea that diversity makes people more creative. Those results were quite difficult to find, so I kept narrowing down to more specific processes, where I ended up not even with the idea of a counter-stereotype, but a violation of expectations. It's possible that we violate people's expectations about the world, that's going to make them more creative. And I have found that happens, but provided that people are open-minded about violations of their expectations. And while conducting that research, I have moved from a very social context. So if you think of counter-stereotypes, you would have, you know, a woman who's a car mechanic, and you had a man who's a stay-at-home dad. Those are counter-stereotypes. The picture above that is a stereotypic situation. And so we run studies like that, but when we run those studies, the effects that we were looking for, they weren't as powerful, they weren't as strong. So after a while, what I did is I just did away with the social context, and I started looking at schema violations. And the difference is that if you have this first type of stimuli, okay, it is inconsistent with my expectations, it is counter-stereotypic, but also I have certain norms or certain beliefs about what it entails. Okay, and so depending on whether, for instance, I'm a feminist or I'm a traditional woman, I may endorse the woman working as a car mechanic or not. So you have, in a sense, you have a very dirty manipulation because you have the inconsistency between the types of things that you're exposing people, but you also have the content. So I got rid of the content and I looked at the very sort of cognitive and epistemic process. And I found nice results. I found that when people who are open-minded or who are not closed-minded are exposed to violations of expectations, they become more creative. Whereas people who come into the situation and they're more closed-minded, their creativity actually drops. I've also done some research where I found out that people who are open-minded, which means they score high on openness to experience, they are more interested in stimuli that violate expectations. And that interest carries over for preference. Okay, so there's actually individuals who like new and unexpected things. But is that what open-mindedness truly is? Because it's easy to run a study when you expose people to unexpected things, and also these are things that they're going to like, and that's going to make them more creative. So for me, I always thought that that is a mark of open-mindedness. But then there's other situations. Sometimes you can have a situation where something happens, and it is unexpected, and it is novel, but it goes against your beliefs and goes against your norms. And I would say how you react in that situation is actually the truer measure of your open-mindedness. Will I be able to communicate with somebody who surprises me, who does something that violates norms, and actually it violates my beliefs? A good example of a person who does that very well is this woman, Arlie Hochschild. I found her book last year, and basically this is a sociologist from Berkeley who does qualitative research, and she also does interviews with people. And so what she does is she immerses herself in some kind of community, stay there for a couple of years, and then write a monography about it. And so what she thought one day is, you know, I'm surrounded in this liberal bubble in Berkeley, I have my vegan food and I go to yoga, and I hear people all around me say very negative things about the Tea Party, members of the Tea Party. I had no idea who these people are. And so what she did is she actually moved to Louisiana, and she lived there part-time for about 5 years and tried to communicate with people and understand how they're thinking and write a book about that. And I'd probably not do that, but I think that is truly open-minded. And that completely, that is a completely different perspective on open-mindedness than how I thought of that construct in my own research. And indeed, if you look into philosophy, philosophers will say that to be open-minded is to be aware of one's fallibility as a believer and to acknowledge the possibility that any time I believe something, I may be wrong, and the ability to listen to another person. And that kind of perspective on open-mindedness is nearly absent in social psychology. When you dig very deeply, you will find something, so it's not like we're not aware of it at all. Very recently, Mark Brandt from Tilburg, who's actually a collaborator of Travis, has published a paper in JPSB where he shows a very, very interesting phenomenon. Namely, he shows that while people who are high in openness to experience are more tolerant, at the same time, they apply their tolerance selectively. So a person open to experience is going to be tolerant, is going to believe that tolerance is very important, but if you ask them to apply that to a certain group, they're going to be more tolerant to somebody who is more progressive. So they're going to be more tolerant to somebody who advocates or who is an LGBT person, but they're going to be less tolerant of a person who supports a traditional family model. And the reason for that is that, you know, they do believe in tolerance, but they also have a certain preference for a certain type of person, and these two motivations, they kind of tipped against one another, and they lead to a certain imbalance. And so one conclusion from that is epistemic measures are not the best predictors of respectful dialogue or of our willingness to listen to other people and engage in a conversation with them. There are a couple of papers out there, very small ones, very low-key in low-key journals. There is some research that has been conducted on group norms and whether those group norms support open-mindedness or not, and that's mostly in organizational behavior literature where people look at whether in groups where people are willing to listen to one another or where the norm prevalent is that we should listen to one another and take each other's views into perspective, that these groups share more information, there's better outcomes and better productivity. I think, so this is a measure from the 90s, it has about 70 citations, but it's not a dominant perspective, I would say. So they use items like, the team believes that members should try to understand the suggestions proposed by other members. And it's a measure that kind of pops in and out of organizational behavior literature, but it's very shy. It's not a popular perspective on things. There's another measure, the actively open-minded thinking scale. But again, this is not a very popular one. It never surfaced. It never surfaced very saliently onto the literature. Perhaps also because statistically, they're not very well developed. But that's a completely different story. And what I was very pleased to find out recently is that in the last 2 years, there's been a new development, which is Victor Ottati. I don't know this guy, so I don't even know how to pronounce his name. He's published three papers trying to understand what open-minded cognition is. And they actually started to developing this idea that open-mindedness is about being open to other people's ideas, even if those ideas are different from my own. And it sort of entails a greater readiness to engage in a conversation with people and listen to them, whereas closed-mindedness is about not taking into account these people's arguments and not being open to consider what they have to say. And so there's a scale. There's items on the scale like I have no patience for arguments I disagree with, which would be a negatively coded item, or I am open to considering other people's political viewpoints. And that scale is related to openness to experience, but not very highly. However, it is, for instance, related to an empathic concern towards other people. Okay, so I think there is an element of openness to experience to it, or epistemic openness to it, but there's also something else, which is a more social valence, social aspect to it. And so that measure may be more appropriate to trying to capture a sort of more cooperative and less arrogant approach to people, to other people and what they have to say in a discussion. And there's also two very interesting experimental studies that they've done, which is one thing that they show is that perceptions of expertise seem to give people the permission to be more closed-minded. So in this study, they introduced research participants to Jason, and Jason didn't have any more patience for political arguments. He didn't really want to listen to other people. And it seems that when Jason is portrayed as a person who has a high level of expertise, it's allowed. Whereas if he's less of an expert, we would expect him to be more open-minded, which means we apply this idea of open-mindedness selectively, and some people are allowed it more and some people are not. If somebody knows what they're doing, we definitely think it's allowed to be more closed-minded. They've also run studies where they gave research participants false feedback in an experimental paradigm. So that was a false negative or false positive feedback. You did well, you did badly. Or in another study, they simply asked people to perform a difficult or an easy task. And they showed that when people fail at something and when they have a feeling that they're not experts at something, they become more open-minded. However, when they feel that they've performed well, their open-mindedness goes down. And the reason for that, they argue, is normative entitlement. If I'm an expert at something, I'm entitled not to listen to others that well and to have my own view and stick to my own view and defend that and not pay attention to what other people are saying and not take that in. There's one last line of research is showing that another thing that is happening is open-mindedness is applied or found more appropriate in certain contexts than others. For instance, in contexts that support our beliefs or in contexts that support general kind of sort of societal norms, open-mindedness is more acceptable. So in this study, what happened is research participants were introduced to Donald, the kind of classical impression formation task, and Donald is portrayed either as a person who's open to considering other people's viewpoints and seriously taking them, and he listens to some kind of persuasive message, or he's closed to information that's conveyed there. And the information that Donald hears either promotes equality or it promotes inequality. And the assumption is that a message promoting equality is the normative message. Most people would say it's not a nice thing to promote inequality in the world. And so what we see here is three things, and let me explain you what is on this axis. The higher the score is, the more people think Donald should behave in an open-minded way, the more they endorse his open-mindedness. Anything below zero means there's a bit of leeway for him to behave in a closed-minded way. And so what you see immediately is, first of all, people think Donald overall should behave in an open-minded way. This is a norm that we believe is this is something good. We think that it's desirable. But what we also see is open-mindedness is more desirable with respect to a message that is socially sanctioned versus one that is not. And there's a third effect there, which is what are our personal beliefs as research participants. So liberals are going to think it's very important to be open-minded about an equality-promoting message. However, they also think it's okay to be closed-minded about an inequality-promoting message. Okay, so on the one side, it seems like open-mindedness is about listening to others and hearing their views, but we do it selectively, depending on what we believe, and depending on whether we believe this is a true, this is a valuable opinion or not. And there's another version of that, which is about us, about research participants voting for politicians. Research participants are reading some stories or reading some communications from politicians, and the politicians either share political views of the research participant or not. So participants in the study, they self-identified as conservatives or liberals. And then in the incongruent condition, you have a participant forming an opinion about a politician who is incongruent. So a liberal participant, a conservative politician, and the other way around. And it seems that to trust a politician who has opposite views to ours, we hold them to a very high standard in terms of open-mindedness. Okay? So I am able to communicate with this person who has other views from me, but they really have to display that they're open-minded and they're flexible. Because if they don't, I'm not going to vote on them, I'm not going to like them, I'm not going to trust them. So, to conclude, epistemic measures that are out there in psychology, they're not the best predictors of open-mindedness understood in terms of respectful, humble dialogue. Measures of open-minded cognition may be more appropriate as they capture an openness to opposing views, so there is something out there that could be helpful. Perceived own and others' expertise is actually bad for our ability to engage with another person in an open-minded way. People prefer open-minded cognition. So we know this is a social norm, and we endorse it. Most of the people endorse it, at least in an American participant sample, because that's where the study was run. But this is especially so when the message supports our own views and the conventional views.